This is Call with Dad's podcast, where today's issues, concerns, and joys of being a dad are discussed, with your hosts E.A. Maynard and Mr. Pancake sharing their views, experiences, and all things they know. Join the journey with us. Welcome to Call with Dads, more than a podcast or a website, but your home for a community of dads who want to be better. Now let's get started.
So let's get this started then. So Jody, I appreciate you being here. Your story is one that almost every dad that I can imagine would be sitting there thinking, I would do the same thing your dad did. And for anyone that doesn't know, I'm going to have you kind of give a rundown of it. But there's a lot in your book, Why Gary Why, that we need to, well, I want to kind of get answered, because your dad, before I read your book, I had one opinion of the situation. After that, it's a completely different situation with mixed thoughts, at least for me. Now, I don't So, Jody, if you could.
One instance, I was the same. I would have done the exact same thing. And then I read the book and I'm like, well, I don't know.
There's a lot in there, and I have a few questions I wrote down just because some of the questions I had. Your book is not the easiest to get through, mind you. I mean, it's not hard to read. That's not the thing. It's hard topics.
Yeah, the information is.
Yeah. Jody, if you can let everyone know real quick, for anyone that doesn't know you, who are you, what is your book, and why do dads need to care about your book?
All right, so I'm Jody Ploche. When I was in fifth grade, I started taking karate from a man named Jeff Doucette, who was a pedophile, who was a groomer. He groomed me and my family, and he started sexually abusing me when I was 10 years old. And when I was 11 years old, he had gotten some financial problems, and he decided to leave town. Well, when he left town, since I was his love interest for the past year, he decided to take me with him to California. We went to Los Angeles, eventually Anaheim. He was arrested 10 days later. And then 2 weeks after that, when he was being returned home from California, my father showed up at the airport in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and literally blew his brains out in front of a television camera. So that's what I'm known for pretty much on TikTok. I wish it was more from my book, because more people see TikTok videos than they read my book. But I wrote a book called Why Gary Why, because that's what as soon as my dad shot him, the police officer, Mike Burnett, he yelled, "Why, Gary? Gary, why?" And he actually ran over and covered up my father so the other police officer, Bud Connor, wouldn't shoot him. Because Bud died last year, but I had talked to him previously, and he told me, he's like, if that camera wasn't there, I'd have shot him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's basically who I am. And so those who don't, aren't familiar with the story, my father only got probation. He didn't go to jail. He shot him on a Friday. He got out on Monday, went to a psychiatric facility for about 3 weeks, and then he came home, and he never went to jail.
Yeah. I don't see that happening nowadays of just call me funny, but nowadays.
No, if the same people were in the same positions, my issue is this. The same people that were in the judicial system that got my dad probation would have been the same people that would have made sure Jeff Doucette would have went to the penitentiary for the rest of his life. And I think that would have been a better, for me as the victim, if you would have given me the choice, even now. Well, I mean, we do have a really cool video, and I'm doing this interview 40 years later. So maybe I would side with the video. But at the time, when I was 10, 11 years old, I would have rather Jeff go to jail for the rest of his life and deal with those consequences. It wouldn't have been a daddy let him off easy. I tell people all the time, like, okay, we're all gonna die.
Right.
If I had a choice, I would take Jeff's other than being on video. Because Jeff don't know. Like if everyone came back and rose again, Jeff's gonna keep walking thinking he's about to go down them steps, because he don't even know he's dead.
Right. So and that's true, because now what I'm seeing a lot, and I guess it depends on the location, because down in the South and all this, Louisiana, from what I understand of the culture there, they don't play around with that kind of stuff. Children are still protected down there, where other parts in the country, it's a little more iffy in things I've seen. Like, I know my wife was telling me about her boss had a kid in a institution and got found 24 hours later dead with his underwear and pants off, and they won't investigate. So things like that kind of makes me sit there and go, would that situation play out again? And like you said, one, Jeff, he didn't know, and putting all religion aside, hell, heaven, this and that, once Jeff is dead in this world, his punishment's done. So now with, like I said, Mr. Pancake and I both were on the same pursuit of, you know, if somebody ever did that to my kid, I would do the same. And, you know, one thought is would I, after going through your book, I'm sitting there thinking, would I still do it? Because you mentioned in your book that you talk about not saying I'll kill him because that'll stop the kid from coming to the parent and telling them because of the relationship the groomer forms. Do you think that that was the big reason that you felt bad for Jeff, or you thought Jeff didn't need to be taken out like that because there was that relationship formed, that grooming that he did?
Yeah. I mean, for me as an 11-year-old child, that was like literally the first time I had experienced death or you know, some type of someone who I knew was close with that died. Not to mention it was on national television. So yeah, it was a strange situation. And I think that played a lot into it. But the one point that I make in the book is that a parent needs to be there for their child. So even though you want to go and kill this person, it's more important that you're there. I got lucky because I got both.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah, that was kind of my perspective. When I was reading it, it was kind of in my mind, prior to reading the book and prior to knowing anything, I really didn't realize so much so that he was that deep into your family. You know, I thought I went to karate class as a kid and stuff, but I mean, my parents would take me there. They wouldn't even drop me off. They would just sit over in a lobby for like an hour, you know, would do the karate and then I would leave. And then my karate teacher was like, hi, sensei, whatever. And then that was the extent of any relationship we ever had. So the idea that he was actually that close of a friend was like, whoa, I didn't even realize that at all. He was that deep into your family. So I think that played such a larger, you know, factor in the matter, and it hit a lot harder home to realize. I mean, it could be your best friend, your neighbor, and then something like that. So that, I don't know, that was just such a difference in how I was able to take the perspective for me. You know what I mean? It made it for me thinking about killing the guy. Now, not only if he is my friend also, and we're hanging out, you know, like you were saying, you guys had like, they would do family nights where you guys would like do games and stuff. We're doing that stuff, have beers and stuff. Now I'm personally building a relationship with a guy, you know, in a way, would that make me more mad at him and want to kill him even more? Or would that make me like afraid to kill him because he's my friend? You know, not only am I upset with him for doing what he did, but I'm also, you know, like, you know, the guy's my friend. I can't just kill him, you know. So I don't know where those feelings would go from there. Like,
I think that betrayal factored in. Like, I mean, my dad literally cried because he felt bad for Jeff because he didn't have anybody. And, you know, picked him up and brought him to the house, let him shower, gave him clean clothes. And so I think that betrayal, I think that factored into it.
It played a larger factor into the fact that he, instead of just accepting, being upset that it happened and letting him go to jail, he took it even further because he was not only upset of what happened, but he was also betrayed by a friend. Now that makes sense. That's kind of insane that would happen.
Yeah. You know, the one other thing that you mentioned, and speaking of being somebody close or somebody that grooms not just the child, but grooms the parents as well, that you mentioned in your book, that because you mentioned multiple times in it, it's not the creepy old guy at the park. It's that friend, that cousin, that uncle, that whatever, that's friends with the family somehow that's getting in there and having access to the kid. Now, you also mentioned that, like, your mom told you, and you mentioned this in your book, that your mom told you multiple times, if somebody does something, tell them. If a stranger touches you, tell them. And right. you mentioned how she did that, but let alone Jeff wasn't a stranger to you at that point, and you didn't tell because you even said that, oh, well, it must be a mistake. It can't be him doing this for this reason, which you pointed that was his way of testing the threshold.
Yes, when he was testing my boundaries, absolutely. He was just seeing how I respond. And, you know, like, I guess I passed his test because, you know, he decided to move further on. I'll say this. I mean, unfortunately, pedophiles are good at what they do. Most pedophiles will molest several children before they're ever caught. And so they have to be careful. And they use the affection. Like, you hear, like, people go, oh, you know, he threatened to kill the parents. No, Jeff never threatened anybody. But the fact that I knew if I said something, Jeff would get in trouble or my dad would kill him. I knew my dad would kill him if I said anything. And so I just kept quiet.
Right. And you even said in your book that you asked your mom not to tell your dad about everything that happened that you told her. So
even when he knew what had happened, I didn't want him to know the details. And she felt obligated as a parent. He was my father, and she felt like he needed to know. And he was obsessed with one act that, you know, oral. And so that only happened a couple of times, but for whatever reason, it just really sent my dad over the edge. And I mean, he was basically a kamikaze pilot going to the airport with a gun in his boot.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I guess I have kind of a curiosity. I guess it's hard to really tell nowadays, you know, after all these years later, but I mean, do you think, looking back at how Jeff was and all of those things, do you think that Jeff intentionally embedded himself into your family and did those things to groom your family and connect with your family and stuff specifically to get attention and connection to you? Or do you think that he, one or the other, was just kind of an additive to the other? Does that make sense?
You got to realize I had a younger brother. All right. So okay. I was born in 72. He's born in 75. So he's 3 years younger than me. So as soon as I went through puberty, Jeff had another
one lined up.
Baywatch beauty. You know, like,
right.
You know, so Jeff actually, yeah, absolutely 100% groomed my family so he could have access to me. And then eventually it would have been my little brother.
Right.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Now you've worked in the, I believe it was mentioned, and correct me how, because I'm going to probably hack it up, but the violent prevention and things like that, kind of different organizations to help people stay away from that kind of situation or recover from it. Now, since you went through it, there's a couple things that really made me wonder, because in your book you mentioned, like, one, a boy who was abused or molested, and then he started doing it to his sister because that was what happened to him.
Acting out.
Yes, but then in another thing you mentioned that, like, people that have been molested that molest other kids, or people that molest kids will say, oh, I was molested as a kid, is not always the truth. Now, and you said that, obviously, you're attracted to girls. You mentioned that in your book. You mentioned that that's not the case just because you're molested, you're going to go that and do that thing. Do you find that people are using that as an excuse to get away with what they're doing? Or do you think that there is a correlation between some people being molested and then going on and doing that?
Okay, so in my book, I also mentioned a book called Vandalize Love Maps. It's a book written by John Money from John Hopkins University. And I believe that there are certain windows, okay, depending on your age. My favorite comedian, Jim Norton, I believe he swears that he was never molested. He is married to a trans woman. That means, you know, she has a penis, and he claims he's not gay. And I, you know, loving Jim Norton, I've never thought of him as a gay man, but he's married to a woman with a penis. And when he was younger, I believe he was acted out on. Okay, him and his buddies, he said by the time he was like in fifth grade, he had like 20 sexual partners because they would perform oral sex on each other. And I believe that Jim was acted out on at a young age, that he wasn't old enough to where he, whatever it is, it corrupted what probably was the normal cycle that he would have gone through. So yeah, I think Jim has a vandalized love, Matt, but you know what? He's found someone, he's attracted to him, they're married, they, you know, care about each other, and who am I to say that there's anything wrong with that? But like Jim said, he goes, I'm not gay, but clearly I'm not straight.
Right.
So I do believe that there is that confusion that can happen with the vandalized love maps. But I think for most part, there is no excuse. Like Jim has not violated a little child, you know. So if you're if someone acts out on you or victimizes you, that gives you no excuse to victimize anyone else.
Right.
And I agree with that. And I mean, that makes sense. Whatever makes you happy, do what you need to do, but leave the kids alone. And
as long as it's between consenting adults, I don't give a
shit. No, that's you're fine. Right. We can bleep.
Exactly. I have editing. That's the great thing about recording. I can edit. Now, another thing is like I said, I took a few notes here. So it's basically, like, here's the problem that you mentioned also is that these predators, these pedophiles, all this stuff, they kind of go after single women, and they are going after a way to attack the children through a mother that doesn't have a father figure for the kids there. Is there something that mothers or even the divorced dad can do, in your opinion, to stop this so that they don't get experimented on or don't get abused? Because you even said in your book, Jeff, his mom let her boyfriends act out on him. So with that, is there a way for divorced parents to actually do something to, do you think there is something they could do to strengthen that resolve?
Is there red flags to pay attention for also?
I think in Jeff's situation, I think his mother was actually trafficking him. So this is a whole different thing than what, let's say, you know, my mother and my father being separated. No, as a parent, you just got to remember, if someone wants to spend more time with your kid than you do, that's a red flag to me. That's the biggest red flag, because in order to molest or sexually abuse a child, they have to have alone time with them. And so if they're trying to create alone time with your child, flag.
Which makes sense. I mean,
And I mentioned in the book, like, I've taken my niece to her first Saints game, my nephew to his first Saints game. I took my other nephew to his first LSU basketball game, and he don't even realize it, but I got a picture with him at Dale Brown and Chris Jackson, and he don't even know who Chris Jackson is. I mean, like, we could sit him down, because he was a kid, we could sit him down and be like, watch this guy. But I never tried to create that. My brother called me and said, hey, can you help me out? And I was like, yeah, I can do this. So I never try to create alone time with my nieces and nephew. Trust me, I got nieces and nephew that live across the street from me, and they probably think I hate them. But, that to me is the biggest flag, because they got to create that opportunity to be alone.
Right. Which,
that makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you find a because when you're saying that, the one thing I think about is, like, when I go back to Ohio where I go to see my family.
O-H.
Exactly, I.O. When they go back and we're with them, like, my brother's looking forward to taking my son out in the woods and all this stuff, fishing, what so have you. Now, my brother, I have a feeling that if anything ever happened to my son or daughter, he would just put him down without even a thought. And in that area, he has enough friends, I would think, that he might not have anything to worry about as well. But the fact is I believe my brother would protect my kids with his life if he needed to, where it came down to. So I have no problem with him wanting to take my son out to the woods and show him his hunting stands and show him all these things. But it's not like he's setting out for that. Like, he's looking forward to doing it, but it's not his worldly goal. Where where do you find the lines drawn where you have some people, like you said, that are intentionally trying to create the environment to be alone with them versus an uncle that wants to show his hobby to his nephew or niece that has a similar interest? You know what I mean?
I would say just be there.
Right.
You know, because that's the thing. It's normally it's a family member, someone trusted. So everyone probably who's ever found someone who molested their child was like, God, I never thought he would do it. So, you know, like I said, just be there.
All right. So makes sense. But
it makes sense. I mean, I can see that. Like, I mean, to me, it's like, how do I get around that? You know, because like for me and my brother, we don't really talk much. He's there. But if I did, you know, and my brother was like, hey, you know, take my son fishing or whatever. If I had a son, I don't have a son, but I got a daughter. But if I had a son, he's always asking to take my kid fishing, you know. I mean, so I was thinking, like what, how do I stop that there, or should I, you know, and if maybe my brother only does it once or twice or whatever, you know, just to go fishing, kind of connected fam or whatnot. But is there a point, like, should like once be like, yeah, all right, let it happen once, let him go fishing once, or should it just be straight up, just nope, not at all, zero, I'm there all the time, I'm the dad? You know what I mean?
I don't want to cause paranoia, you know, right. But you know, you have to. I also would explain to my kid before they went, you know, just certain things. So there's a fine line between being paranoid and not letting your kid do nothing and letting your kid experience life. So, right. You know, I mean, I don't have that. read the book and figure it out, you know, yourself.
Yeah. Right. That makes sense.
And there's a lot of indications in your book that, like I said, mm-hmm. your book has a lot of topics and some of them are kind of rough to get through just because hearing what you went through was kind of especially.
Wait. Let me just say this. It wasn't that bad. Like, I tried to make it to where it wasn't that graphic or
it wasn't graphic.
I had to keep in mind that a victim is going to be reading this book, and I didn't want the victim to get traumatized and put the book down. So I tried to keep it, you know, light. You know, I tried to mix both. You know, it's the only book about child rape, kidnap, and murder that I think people will say was funny.
Right. And don't get me wrong. So let me rephrase this. From a father's perspective, it's rough to listen, rough to get through because you're sitting there going, man, what if that happened to my kid? Or what if, you know what I mean? All these what ifs run through as a father. It's weird. Like you start talking about your son, your karate instructor, and when you first mentioned that, I'm sitting there thinking, well, I'm taking my kid to karate tomorrow, and of course I'm there, and so it's a completely different situation. I don't even know the guy's first name, to be honest with you, but it's that whole thought is you hear that and you start running through what if all this stuff, you know what I mean? So when I say rough, I'm talking from a father's perspective. That you're sitting there hearing a kid going through this. You know what I mean?
I'll tell you a funny story. When I was working at Victim Services Center, Montgomery County in Pennsylvania, my boss, who she was from, I want to say San Antonio, and she's living in Dallas now, but she came to me and she's like, she had a 9-year-old, and she's like, hey, I'm thinking about putting my kid in karate. What do you think about that? I'm like, you're asking me? She had forgotten. I'm like, wait, you're asking me? And I will say this. I have nothing against karate. You know, it could have easily been a softball coach. It could have easily been a volleyball coach. You know, it just happened to be a karate teacher.
Just happened to be that.
But...
It just happened to be a position where he could have access to children, and that's where they do what they do.
Right, that's what they do best. Yeah, and I remember when I was reading your book, you were kind of talking about how because you said it wasn't that bad, and I guess you were right when you were explaining it. A lot of the details, you know, to you at the time, there were some uncomfortable situations and some weird stuff happening, but it really wasn't like such a wretched thing. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't like, you know, like how a movie.
Right, you're looking at 15 minutes out of the day. You know, if I'm with him for 24 hours, there's only 15 minutes where I'm, suffering through this. Other than that, we're going to the movies. We're going to the mall. You know, it's fun things.
He's spending the rest of the day grooming you and getting you up and so on and so forth. Yeah, and like how a lot of the stuff how you were explaining. I mean, it wasn't like how the movies explains it, where he's got you like tied up with rope, you're like bleeding everywhere, and he's like beating you to death while you're getting raped and stuff. And that wasn't the case.
No, I went to Disneyland.
In your eyes, and yeah, you got to go to Disneyland, you got to go to do all these things, and then you had, I mean, and for in reality, the way it was described, how you described it, really wasn't like suffering. It's suffering mentally nowadays, but at the time, it was just kind of mildly uncomfortable, right? I mean, is that to you? Is that a decent explanation of kind of the scenario?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I even described it this way: if I could go back and live my life again, knowing what happened, I would say absolutely. You know, I mean, my trip or my kidnapping, I don't look as a kidnapping. I look at it as a vacation to Disneyland or to California. I mean, I got to see the Hollywood sign. That was awesome.
Right. Because I mean, you at the time you were a child, and he was, I guess, for lack of a better, lesser word or whatever,
a man child.
He was a man child, and he wasn't trying to upset you or keep you as some sort of, you know, victim, or keep you as some sort of, you know, hostage or whatever. He was, you know, trying to make it to you. You were just hanging out with him. You know, so he wouldn't upset you.
Let me say this. I had a friend of mine. He did a personality evaluation on him. And had it come to that, he probably would have. So he didn't have to, you know, slit my throat and put me in the woods. But I think if it would have came down to it, he would have.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's kind of scary to think that you were in that situation, that it could have potentially happened. That's pretty crazy. Pretty scary.
So another part of your book that stands out to me is with you mentioning about the going to California and such, and he tried to talk you into traffic. Basically working for money, for sex.
He was going to do to me what his mother did to him.
Exactly. Right. Now, you said no and no way, blah, blah, blah. And he didn't push it after that, you said. But do you think if you guys didn't get caught, if he didn't get caught, do you think he would have pushed forward? Because human trafficking right now is big into the news, big into things. And, I mean, I'm hearing stories about people getting followed through Walmart and Walmart's parking lot that has kids because of they're trying to kidnap kids and things like that. Do you think he would have pushed it if he didn't get caught?
You know what? I hate to give him credit, but I do believe that he allowed me to call home collect. We were out of money, and I think that he kind of gave up. So I do believe that he chose to deal with the consequences rather than sell me out. So I do think that, you know, I'll give him a check on that one. He did the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. But do you think that that's a common situation, or something that really, as like I said, right now, human trafficking is between the movie Freedom, Sound of Freedom. Yeah, thank you. My entertainment value, my interest in all that in entertainment is very low anymore. So I don't really get too many movies. But
that was a good movie.
Yeah, but I hear it was a great movie. Hopefully someday I get the chance to actually watch it. But, I mean, do you think that people need to be more vigilant towards the sex trafficking issue? I guess here's where my mind's going is with pedophiles, sex trafficking, and kidnapping on a rise nowadays, from what I'm reading and hearing a lot. Do you think that there's people need to be more vigilant about it now? Because I've had people tell me I'm paranoid because I'm always trying to watch my kids.
It's funny because when the movie Sound of Freedom came out, of course I felt obligated to go to the movie theater and watch it because it was about, you know, sex trafficking. Right. And my mother just yesterday asked me, what does nonpartisan mean? Because we were watching Bill Maher did a special on one of the shows. And I was like, nonpartisan means it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat. There are certain things like child trafficking that whether you're to the right or to the left, it shouldn't matter.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Like, you are against not having sex with children. That's nonpartisan. So yeah, when that movie came out, I don't know why there was a big controversy. Oh, they're like, this, you know, group. And like, everyone should be against child trafficking. I mean, yes. that's a go-to.
Yes.
That's nonpartisan.
Right.
It should be. I mean, I could kind of tell you why it's, you know, portrayed in that aspect is, I mean, the whole LGBT movement and all the, you know, the trans ideology and the grooming of children and all that stuff. I mean, it happens on the right, you know, with conservatives and stuff, but the amount that it happens, especially the amount that they portray, especially through social media, is like 99% on the left, Democrats, you know what I mean? Liberal people, you know, I mean, you're not going to find no Christian conservative male in Mississippi be like, oh yeah, you know, I'm totally a girl while he's got a beard, you know, it's not going to happen, you know,
you will find him in a rest stop.
Yes.
Right. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
But just the majority of those scenarios happen on the left, so that's kind of where that, I guess I would assume that ideology came from, that it was a nonpartisan, which it shouldn't be. It's not. It really isn't. You know, anybody that thinks that is just nuts, whether they're left or right or up or down.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it just seems to be more prevalent. The pedophilia, the gay and trans, and the LGB, you know, all that stuff is, the plus side, where those people are, all of that seems to be more prevalent on the left. So, because
and from my experience, I think it's equal.
Yeah. All
right. So
yeah, I see it in the media, social media. That's really the only place I see it. Because in real life, I guess I live in Florida. It's very conservative. There's nothing here, you know. So where I'm at, I mean, you don't even see gay people. They just don't exist, you know. And if they do, they keep it under wraps. You know what I mean? So
they're not advertising.
So wait, so right. are you the one? Are you the one that was on Twitter?
Who, me?
Yeah,
I'm on. Yeah, yeah. I was the one that was on Twitter. That you. Yeah,
we connected with.
Yep. And I was the one who made the shirt and the stuff with your dad, and that's how you connected to me, right? Yep. Yeah, everybody, you know, I created the page Pancakes with Your Dad just kind of off a whim, and just over time, it's, you know, not me. I didn't dub myself as Mr. Pancakes, but it was kind of just developed that way. Everyone just calls me Mr. Pancakes because I refuse to give my identity.
Well,
but yeah, I've always thought that, you know, that most of that stuff that I made was prior to reading your book. So I still do, but I thought of your dad as like a hero. Like, he's awesome, he's amazing, you know. So that's like every dad's like exact go-to. If that scenario happens, you know, that's exactly what's gonna happen, you know what I mean? And every dad in my mind, that's how every dad should feel, you know. You don't touch my effing kid, I'll, you know, slit your throat, you know.
Thank God for editing.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that slipped up.
Well, I do it literally 10 times a show. Every show, all the time. He edits me more than anybody.
Well, the one thing I'm happy to hear is that I kind of changed your perspective. I mean, it's almost like people say that, oh, if someone does it to my kid, I do the same thing. Like, so almost like they want that to happen so they can do it. But
now, I'm not saying that I wouldn't do that. I'm not saying that if that scenario or situation happened, that I would not do what your dad did. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I am now capable of looking at it and going, should I or should I not? You know what I mean? Because now I don't know whether I would do that. Would I do it or would I not? I'm not saying I wouldn't. I'm saying I don't know whether I would or not. Before, I would go, heck yeah, I'm stabbing him in his neck. You know what I mean? Shit, I'll rape him back, you know, whatever. You know, whatever the case. But now that I read your book, it's like, you know, good that it happened, but bad that it happened, because did it almost cause you as a child more pain and more suffering in the long run and in the short run? And then in a way, now that you're much older, like you were saying earlier, you were saying you would have rather, for what he did, rather let him and watch him rot in a jail cell than, in a weird way, get away with it just by, and he doesn't know. He's dead, you know?
I will say this, though. Mm-hmm. It doesn't hurt to have everyone think that you had the greatest dad of all time.
Right. Yeah. Now, so
there is that. Right. And we got a cool video.
You know, so I posted on our dad's group that we're a member of called Lords of X, okay? And they're part of our affiliate program and what so have you. There's one comment I posted in there where I asked people, telling them that we're going to have a conversation with. And there's one thing that somebody put out saying that the people were talking about, oh, well, I would have shot the guy too, blah, blah, blah. And one person said that they wouldn't have done it as much as they wanted to, strictly because they wouldn't want the they would have done it to save the kid all the media publicity, all the things that happen, and their thinking behind killing the pedophile, killing the scum, which is my thought. Right. Doing that to the guy would have saved you all the media publicity, all the torture that you would have dealt with through the news cameras and all this, but it doesn't sound like that was the case.
So I don't know whether it was a good thing or a bad thing, because I'm looking at it, I'm in sixth grade, I mean, middle school, and everybody knew I was kidnapped, but no one knew about the sexual abuse. And so when Daddy shot Jeff, then everybody learned about the sexual abuse. So I don't know whether that was a good thing that I had to deal with it then in sixth grade, or if I'd have kept it a secret, would that have rotted my soul? So, you know, so maybe it was a good thing, maybe it wasn't. I just know that no one knew about the sexual abuse. So when I tell people that, you know, it upset me that Daddy shot Jeff, people misunderstand it because they don't understand what I was going. I mean, I'd had a pretty bad year.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I think. Like most people today, and I know there's a lot of people that are, you know, in social media and stuff that I follow that are pretty awesome, that say some great things. You know what I mean? There was that. We watched that video earlier. The Nick Freitas guy. He's awesome. You know, I like a lot of the stuff he says. He had a video years and years ago. It was earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. He was talking about a guy that interviewed like a world renowned pedophile. And he was saying, you know, a lot of that information, you know, that most pedophiles don't really look at the kid. They look at the family and figure out whether it's easy to get into the family to do that stuff. You know, they don't really, you know, he specified the dad, and, you know, looking at the dad, is the dad easy to manipulate and stuff like that? So it's kind of curious that he was so easily capable of getting into your family like that and being so close. You know what I mean? He did exactly opposite of what that guy did. You know what I mean? Or what that other guy was talking about. That other guy says if that dad is someone who's always there, he's in depth, he's someone that, you know, he's not someone to be rifled with, then they should stay away. But in your case, Jeff did exactly the opposite. He just found himself getting closer in order to do it, which was odd and interesting. It's kind of crazy to think that. And the Nick Freitas guy also talks about how, you know, there is no bounds. It doesn't matter what you say or what you do. Something like that happens to my kid, I'm gonna kill you. You know, the end. You know, I would actually like to, you know, him to read your book. And even, you know, maybe ask him his thoughts on that entire scenario, because I'm the same mindset as him. You know, somebody does that to my kid, stabbing you in the neck, you know, but then I read your book and I was like, wow, that's a totally different perspective, you know, different ideology. You know, it's interesting to see the other side, to see the child's side so many years later.
Yeah. And that was kind of the dynamic, because I'm trying to give my perspective as an 11-year-old. Mm-hmm. Versus my perspective as a, I guess, 45-year-old.
Right.
And so how I felt at 11 is different than I feel at 45, but, you know.
Right. And I mean, as much as I would want to, like, murder the guy, in a way, it's almost like how you explained it in the book, like, back then when you were a kid, I mean, maybe it wasn't a love relationship, but it was a relationship. You were a friend. You were friends. You know, you guys spent a lot of time together. Right. You didn't hate the guy. So you had a relationship with this person. So when like you said, when Daddy shot Jeff, now it's like, well, Dad, why'd you do that? You know what I mean? Now it's almost like I'm mad at Dad. So and then you obviously put a bunch together and things happen. You figure out what's going on, but that's just a different perspective. So now, do I want to put my child through that? You know what I mean? You know, do I want my child learning about death through Dad murdered my friend?
Well, you know? Yeah.
Right. It seems like it shouldn't be that way, but that's in a weird way, that's exactly how it ended up happening. You know what I mean? You know, and that's probably at the time, I'm sure how you felt, you know, but so, yeah, it was just interesting reading the book.
Yeah, so let me jump in. This.
I encourage everyone that watches this, go to Amazon.com. Go, the book is Why Gary Why. It's on Audible. If you don't like reading, you can listen to it. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have to get out of here, but been good talking with y'all. Read the book. It's actually not just the story of what happened. There's a lot of information for parents. Mm-hmm. This book should be sold next to What to Expect When Expecting. You should be able to buy those two as a bundle together, because it's just as important as that book.
Yeah. Right. And after going through your book, I agree. So with that being said, we're going to let you go, and we'll follow up with you later. But thank you for being on, Jody. We appreciate all the information. People's going to be able to find your link in the show notes, and people's going to find... I'm trying to see what your hat says.
I got the replica baseball cap my dad had on. I had a replica made.
Oh, nice. That's very awesome. Nice. Heck yeah.
So
can I keep selling the shirts?
Yeah. Hopefully Netflix is going to pick up the book and make it into a documentary, so they might have a problem with it, you know, down the line, but I don't care right now at all.
Awesome. Good. That's awesome. You guys heard it first.
All right. Y'all have a good day.
You too. Thank you.
All right.
So now with Jody gone, basically, it sounds, Mr. Pancake, correct me if I'm wrong, the conversation itself, it sounds like there's a whole lot of, I mean, what did you get out of it?
The whole scenario, I think we said it quite a few times, but it's just a whole different mindset change. Just, you know, would I do what his dad did? Probably. I would probably let him, you know, I don't know if any of you really have watched too many of our shows or talked with me online, but I'm a little bit on the colorful, excited type of person, you know. So more than likely, I would probably let my emotions get the best of me. But now that I read his book, I can't say that I wouldn't or would. It's kind of an up in the air scenario based on how I felt that day, because I think now I'm going to step aside, look at how my child feels over me, because should I take into account my feelings, or should I, as a father, accept my feelings, bury them, deal with it, it sucks, and then take into account my child's feelings over mine? You know what I mean? But it's like he said, was it better or was it worse? Because like he said, nobody knew about the molestation part of it prior to his dad shooting Jeff. So did it hurt him that all of that happened? But would it hurt him worse over the years, burying his own internal knowledge of him being molested and letting it rot in his own soul? You know what I mean? So it's kind of like a, I don't know.
You know, one of the big takeaways I got out of his book, and I doubt this is really what he meant as a big takeaway, but like me personally, I would probably be right there. And if somebody touches my kid, I know several non-dig zones in different states that you can bury a body. And if I caught the SOB before the police, trust me, he would never be found again. You know what I mean? I have several ideas.
Right.
I mean, if you want to be technical.
That's something I think he said it. He was never caught.
Right.
He said he just gave up. He right. just was like, I had enough. And he essentially, I don't know if he turned himself in, but I think he just made himself readily available. You know what I mean? And, so he could get caught.
Right. And there was a statistic I wanted to get in with him that we didn't get into as well. But one is the one thing, like I said, going back to my one thing I picked up was no matter, like you and I, kill the SOB, bury him six feet in the ground with some lime and pour some ants in there so that there is no proof, whatever. But don't tell your kid you will kill the guy or you'll kill somebody that does it, because that might create a fear of him protecting the guy. Because like you said, the guy did build a relationship. He thought he was having, even though it was a hard year for him, he still was going to amusement parks. He was still doing all these things.
Right.
So you don't want your kid to think that if he tells that, I guess the best way is daddy would kill him. It was one thing that he said in his book. And I mean, that's one big thing, but it's also one statistic that I've read and I wish we would have got into it was how the majority of kids that are kidnapped are molested and then kidnapped. Kind of like Jeff, it sounds like, is an oddity in surrendering himself, basically.
Right.
Because most pedophiles or molesters that kidnap a kid will then sell the kid into sex trafficking, will kill the kid once he's done with them.
Or kill the kid.
I mean,
it's almost like once it happens, it's an end of the line.
Yeah, because most pedophiles that go to jail are going to end up not living very long or having a very satisfying life in any way.
Yeah.
But, and to me, I'm very happy with that too, for the ones that make it that far. But I mean, it's crazy to think that there's all these things going on that you expect to tell your kid, hey, don't do this. Be careful of this. Don't talk to strangers if something happens. But, and the one thing that kind of got me thinking was when he said, be there with, like, I was talking about my brother taking my son out to the woods and things like that.
Right.
I said, I have no concerns about my brother.
Right.
But my brother's the guy that would give you the shirt off his back. And if anyone ever touched my son, I think if my brother had the chance, he would get to the guy before me. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but my brother's very much that. He's a very protective person of children. From what I've seen, he cares, but he's not funny in that way whatsoever.
Right.
But I mean, it's crazy to think that, like I was telling my neighbor and I was using him, I said, you know, the fact is he could be somebody that I would have to worry about. My neighbor who saw my daughter the day she was born almost, or the day she came home. And they've been part of our lives for several years now, to the point of the kids refer to him as uncle and aunt. But even them would be somebody we would have to concern about, even though we don't think they would do anything.
Right. But that's that you never know factor.
Exactly. And that's the problem, is it's you never know. And the problem is you can't be with your kids every moment of the day. Right. I send my kid out to a nature class for 4 hours with a group of kids. So, I mean, but there are things you can do. But I think the big thing is figure out how to talk to your kids in appropriate age range and try to get them to, I don't know. I don't know what the best way would be. Because in all truth, you don't want to tell a 6-year-old, hey, if somebody touches your peewee, you need to tell, which I guess at a 6-year-old or a 5-year-old, you can tell that to a 10, 11-year-old. Imagine they're old enough to be able to say, hey, if somebody ever touches you. But I think that's a big thing. I mean,
in a weird way, you can't go overly pushing it. I mean, you do have, I would imagine you do need to explain and teach and go through that information. But like you said, age appropriate, and you have to be able to learn, say it correctly. Because you can't, like he said, you know, and like you said, you can't tell your kid, you know, if somebody does something like that, you make sure you tell me so I can kill them.
Yeah.
Because if you do that, then your kid's going to probably not tell you. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you got to be careful of how you explain it to them. And then the other thing, I mean, I paid attention to a lot of stuff that really kind of dug into me was, if you pay attention to a lot of social media and stuff about it, these days, a lot of people seem to be focused on the grooming of children.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read his book, like we just talked to him, you talk to him, I mean, a lot of the grooming was on him, but a lot of the grooming was the parents.
Right.
You realize how much they're grooming the parents. And I mean, a kid is easy to groom. It's a kid, you know. You can, as an adult, your influence is unbearable. But other adults, I think, need to not only read his book and pay a little bit more attention and take into account some of the things that he says and how it happened, the situation, the scenario, but they maybe need to do more research about it and maybe pay a little bit more attention in their children's lives, their friends, their families, their friends' families, and because there was even a statistic I read that as an adult, you should never let your child spend the night and have an overnight sleepover with their friend. Is that a little harsh? Probably, because a lot of kids are going to want to do like little sleepovers. But they said, statistically speaking, a lot of the child molestation comes from the parent or the male side of the parent. At the other, if I let my daughter sleep over my neighbor's house, the neighbor dad,
right?
That's essentially the scenario they're discussing, but that's exactly it. I mean, that was a groomed situation,
Right.
Over time, we became friends. The kids became friends. All of that scenario happened. So, but I just think that parents need to pay a little bit more attention. Maybe even away. It's like I was saying about that guy Nick Freitas was talking about, how it's not so much the kid that the molester is looking for. It's the dad, If I make it blatantly evident to my, say my neighbor, for example, not a real neighbor, but just in general.
Right.
If I had a neighbor, if I make it blatantly evident and I talk about it all the time, anybody freaking comes near my kid, I'm literally going to saw their head off and hang it from my front porch. You know what I mean?
Right.
So if I make that blatantly evident, the off chances of it when or if my daughter had a sleepover with the other person or whatever, the off chances of it happening are probably slimmed down a lot, just simply for the fact that he will think twice before doing anything stupid. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I just think the parent or the dad, the mom, need to not only pay a little bit more attention, but assert yourself into your child's life a little bit more as a parent, in those situations.
And, the other thing I got, it sounds like his dad was doing a lot of drinking as well. And, I'm all for having some drinks and occasionally having maybe a glass too many or something like that once in a great while. But it sounds like his parents were having issues. In the book, he talks about it, where the parents were having issues because the dad was drinking a lot. And part of the reason he went to the airport was he was at a bar drinking when he found out about Jeff coming back to the town through the airport. So between liquid courage in him, having the gun available and getting the information, I think those all played a factor in it because, he even says in his book, his mom said that his dad did a good thing by getting out Jeff because he's already molested other children before him.
Right.
He was probably going to molest kids after he got out of jail because if he went to jail, he would have gotten out eventually.
Right.
And then probably have gone back to do it again.
I'm a firm believer of the best pedophile is a dead pedophile. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, I'm right there with you. You won't get an argument out of me there. I honestly believe that the only time I have an issue with the Constitution is when it comes to pedophiles and the portion of the Constitution that says there will not be any unusual punishment. Extreme or unusual punishment. I know if somebody wants to correct me on the wording, they can, but the gist of it is.
Yeah, but that's the gist of it. Yeah, and
right.
The reason that portion
Oh, I understand the reasoning of it.
It is because for the reason that portion in the Constitution is, for the most part, there is no 100% guarantee that this or that happened.
Right.
There can never be a scenario that happened, right?
Well,
I mean,
there's not, let's reword that if I may, there's not always, you right. don't always have the case where, like in the book, Jeff was admitting to molesting him and molesting another kid.
Right.
And I think he said even a prior kid to there, so he's molested three kids at that point, if right. I'm remembering everything properly. So he mm-hmm. was confessing what he's done. So right. there was no question that he did it. With videotapes, right. if somebody does something and they're recorded on film, 99% of the time, yeah. you have the evidence that catches what happened.
Yeah.
But there are those circumstances. I don't
think there's many people that would argue with you on doing something weird back to the guy.
You know,
cruel and unusual punishment for a pedophile. There's not there are people that would argue it, but more than likely, they're also a pedophile.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. But, I mean, I understand quite a bit of what he said in his book that made sense. And, mm-hmm. you know, like I said, somebody in our Lord of X group, who, if you want to learn more about these people, go to our affiliate link and join, because it does help us. But
yeah.
somebody talked about it not wanting the media publicity and all this for the kids. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, that case was big enough. It might not have been national, but mm-hmm. he was still dealing with publicity from, there's cameras coming back, there's things right. in the paper, everyone knew he was kidnapped, and right. once it went to trial, people would have found out that he got molested. I mean, that wouldn't yeah. have, it wouldn't have been a secret. So
right.
one way or another, he would have gone through it. It might, again, not been national, but for a 10, 11-year-old, it would have been his national world. His right. entire world would have been filled with that situation.
Right.
He just would have been able to get away from it when he got an adult and moved out of the area. Whereas yeah. because his dad did it, and back then getting something like that recorded on tape made such the big headline, because back then there wasn't the cell phones. There wasn't,
right.
you didn't even really have camcorders. Well, you might have had camcorders, but they were as big as a TV right. video camera. I mean,
his dad, like that whole scenario, and his dad is probably more famous today than around that time, just because of our technology that we right. have, you know.
Right. And part of it is because when it happened, and the fact of he's almost a symbol to dads that think this way, mm-hmm. like us, because he did it. He got community service and probation. That was
yeah.
his punishment. And yeah. as a dad, I'm sitting there going, really, probation? I can see the community yeah. service. He made a mess in the airport. But
yeah, the videos and stuff going around on TikTok do not do it justice.
Right.
You definitely need to go to his website if you want to see the real video. That oh, is yeah. it, man. It was like, because at first you're like, oh, then you kind of see him laying on the ground and it kind of goes away. Then you watch the video and the camera gets up and on him, and then you're like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, and again, it's one of those things that seeing, like, I've seen the video multiple times before going to his website, and you're like, good on him. Then you watch right. the video on his website, and you're like, and you know, when I watched it, it wasn't
more gory.
Yeah, but the problem is we're so desensitized by gore that yeah. unless you see it in person, it's like, oh, look at that. I've seen worse on the movie that I watched last night, you know?
Right, yeah.
Which the video and quality is better now than it was then. So it's like
yeah.
the movies look more realistic than the tape did of a real yeah. event.
Oh, but, yeah, for sure.
I mean, let's do this. We're going to be able to go on a tangent about this for quite some time.
Yeah.
And instead of
we
doing that.
We definitely need to have him back.
Oh, I agree. If we can get him back on sometime, it'd be great. So. Yeah. Let's do this. So let's wrap up. Let's tell everyone goodbye, obviously, but tell yep. everyone where to find you, like always.
Yeah, of course. You know, again, www.pancakesforyourdad.com. That's the main website. It will have all of my socials. I think it will have the Truth Social. There's not a button on there just because everybody hates Donald Trump. So they won't allow us to have a cool button for Truth Social. But, you know, Truth Social is there, as well as X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. You know, Facebook, I do have an Instagram, as well as LinkedIn. I'm always on all of them. We do have one course. There will be more. There's plenty of resources, cool blogs, lots of information on there as well on the website. So definitely check all of that out. And definitely go find his book and read it for sure. Very good book. Very interesting.
Absolutely. We're going to have a link to his book and his website in the show notes, along with our affiliate links. You can go there. You can go to Lords of X, which they are a fantastic group that we utilize ourselves. We've had multiple guests on, and we have more guests coming that's from Lord of X, because the group of people are intentionally trying to grow an audience, grow a business. Lord of X has helped them do this. And these are people that are trying to make the dad sphere, the dad's lives, make dads have, allow dads to have a better life, find what they need. So we highly encourage that. Mr. Pancake and I both are on there. Our Time for Learning, which is a homeschooling website that you can use in summertime to catch your kids back up if you want, or if you're homeschooling, which I will highly suggest you homeschool, especially the more and more you see what's happening with public schools and all the horrid things that are happening in the world, thanks to public school and the lack of teachers. The list goes on. Homeschooling, if you can figure out how to do it, do it. If you want to try to see if you can find a way to do it, reach out to us. We have a few people we can put you in contact as well. I'm working on a guest that is all about getting dads to be able to homeschool and helping families do that. So I'm looking for that one. And then obviously we have the imagery AI, Leonardo, beautiful. A lot of our, almost all of our imageries we put out is through Leonardo. So with that,
except my pancakes, those are real.
Yes, the pancakes he puts out are real. And with all that being said, I mean, generally it's basically you just go to these links, do the purchase if you feel that these are going to be services that are going to help you, because they'll help us. And the more you do these, the more it's going to help us be able to grow. Or you can go to callwithdads.com and there's donations there. You can donate to us. You can buy us a cup of coffee. You can even buy merchandise if you want. We have options there for you to spend money and help us grow. With that being said, I appreciate you being here. Check out our links. Check out where you can find us. Check out our guests. Jody was fantastic. His links will be there. Find his book. Visit his website. With that being said, have a good day.
One more thing. Jody endorses my Gary t-shirts and stickers and mug and stuff. The FAFO ones. So definitely go to the website, check those out.
There you go.
Endorsed by Jody himself.
Exactly. So with that being said, we appreciate everyone. Thank you for being here. Have a good day.